I'm Jessica Kennedy, and I am co-artistic director of Junk Ensemble.
I'm Megan Kennedy, co-artistic director of Junk Ensemble.
I'm Dennis Clahussy. I'm a composer for theatre and dance, television and film.
We were born in London. My mother's English, father's American. They met in Oxford, and my mother was studying English and art history. My father was studying drama. And then we moved to the States, so first to Michigan, and then we went to California, and then settled in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where my father was a theatre professor there at the Cathedral of Learning. Megan and I are twins. We're identical twins. So we have very similar outlooks on life, and we also have quite similar ways of treating our work. We moved to Dublin when I was 16 because my father got a position as the head of drama, the Samuel Beckett chair.
Jessica and I started ballet classes when we were 6 years old in the Renaissance Ballet, which was in Pittsburgh. And we had a Russian teacher whose name was Yutek, and he was very, very strict. Then we went to Nancy Cleary, this wonderful teacher who had been Utek's pupil, and she could never pronounce any of the French words, so fouette was always fouette. And that's when we discovered contemporary dance, probably around when we were 12, and we really started to enjoy that. We continued doing ballet and contemporary and jazz when we were in Dublin. We went to Debbie Allen in Rathmines. I don't know if it exists anymore, but our father used to drive us there every Saturday. After that, we both trained at the College of Dance for a year. And after that, that's when we went our separate ways. And I went to New York. I went to the Alvin Ailey School. After New York, I went and did a drama and theatre arts degree at Queen Margaret University in Edinburgh. After that, we set up Junk Ensemble. We did a show in Edinburgh Fringe Festival. The piece was called Chocolate Rhino, and we had to come up with a stage name. So we chose Stage Junket, but we dropped the Stage Junket and wanted to keep Junk. The ensemble comes from the collaborative element of our company, and we like the idea of it being an ensemble of junk. So we like to think of it as a collection of junk.
So I first met Megan in 2003. We were doing a show in the Dublin Fringe Festival for this Torsion dance company, which is Niamh Condren's dance company. We were doing a show called Whitewash. That was 2003. I think the next time we worked together was probably when we worked with Jess as well for Myriad Dance Company, and Ella Clark was choreographing Behind the Eye Lies Bone, and that toured for about a year or so, including a performance over in Arizona. And we worked on a couple of other theatre shows. We worked on a show called Can You Catch a Mermaid in Dunleary, directed by David Horan. And we worked on Romeo and Juliet in the Abbey, directed by Jason Byrne, where the two ladies came out as leather-clad security guards for the prince. Our first Junk Ensemble show probably wasn't until 2010, and it was Five Ways to Drown, which we performed in the project.
Five Ways to Drown is about the banality of everyday life. We were interested in the choreography of what happens in domestic situations that occur day after day after day. So it was really about a slice of beige life. We were interested in the familial attitudes. So Jessica and I were both in the show. There was a young boy of 11 and an older woman of 70. And another male professional performer. So we really represented this kind of broken, disturbed family that happened to share the space at the same time. So the set was very much about seeing into people's lives and getting different perspectives. So there were frames designed by Aidan Cosgrove. The audience would view and they would see a different thing depending on which way that they were looking. It was our first major collaboration with Dennis. He composed the music alongside us composing the choreography, so we didn't have the music composed before we went into rehearsal. It happened during rehearsal.
what tends to happen is we discuss music that feels right for the vision, I suppose, of the production, and then maybe, you know, we listen to a couple of tracks from other artists and just see if that, if there's something in the vibe that they have. And I think often, you know, that is a really good starting point, and then it, more often than not, will go off into a completely different territory.
One of the main inspirations of the show, Five Ways to Drown, was a film called You the Living by Roy Andersson. He's a Swedish filmmaker and he influences pretty much all the work that we do. There's a real dark but light touch to all of his work, and it does work. He looks a lot at the banality of these everyday people, but there's always this underlying black humour in it.
When we started on Five Ways to Drown, we were listening to various pieces. One of them that I particularly remember was by Modest Mouse, and I would just kind of use that as a jumping, starting off point. I mean, what happens is when we're in rehearsal, the guys obviously work very closely with the dancers, so it's all kind of created as a team. So I try and get in as much as possible and see how things are developing and progressing. I actually don't bring material. What I'll do is I'll email it to the guys and they'll have a listen to it, and they, you know, we'll get some responses and some feedback and discussion. But we don't actually usually try it that early unless we actually have to choreograph to a particular beat. So if something is in 6-4 time or something like that, then we'll get it in. But normally what's interesting is that it's two kind of evolutions happening at the same time, but because we're both in constant contact and kind of we're talking about it all the time, it seems to work out in a kind of very organic way, and it kind of develops into something that I get a chance to do my thing without being depending on choreography, and they can do choreography without depending on music. So we actually both develop kind of our own artistic styles in a hand-in-hand kind of fashion.
The idea for the movement for Five Ways to Drown, it comes from a lot of different places. We had given an instruction to move in a very slow way, influenced from movement of heroin users on the street, and this kind of very slow, sort of almost reaching something, and that develops throughout the piece. Then we had an idea of being attached to each other constantly by the hands, and so it starts out a little bit easier. We each have our own score, and then we begin climbing on each other, and the main task is to not let go of someone, and you can't let go of their hand. We're influenced by Hitchcock's The Rear Window, and there's a lot of different scenes. There would be more dramatic scenes of seeing someone through a window and looking at something that perhaps you shouldn't be seeing.
The fact that we're dancers and identical twins means that attachment comes into a lot of our work, in particular this piece and also in Dusk Ahead, where attachment has a massive influence. So this section where we're all holding hands in Five Ways to Drown often comes to being attached. I suppose it comes from being in the womb and being attached by the same umbilical cord. And that really helps with certain movement tasks where you have to be very close, and also this ability to know where each other's bodies are.
The next production that we worked on was called The Falling Song for Dublin Dance Festival in 2012, which then went up to Belfast for the Festival of Queens. For that one, we used a children's choir, and the choir we used was Piccolo Lasso Scholars, directed by Aoife O'Donovan. We also had George Higgs, who's a percussionist. Well, he's a composer and inventor, in fact, in his own right. But on this, he'd invented this kind of percussion bar, which had various instruments, including an electric guitar and various things. So he, as well as the pre-recorded material that I'd composed, he would then kind of come in and play on top of that as well. It was a show kind of exploring masculinity and this kind of thing. So there's a lot of kind of raw percussive edge to it.
The spark for the idea came from Jessica and I bashing our heads together after research and development period. We were really interested in this notion of flying, falling and failure, and trying to see how far that can go. This idea that can we fly? Is it possible? And do we always have to fall? And we discovered that quite quickly, that you do. So really interested in the self-destructive nature of humans, and particularly in males. We all know that in younger males, the suicide rate is much higher. So we were interested in exploring that through movement and through this theatrical edge.
The following song was about masculinity, and through that we explored self-destruction and failure and invincibility, so male identity and all the things that come with it, and what kind of movement came out of it was often quite violent but quite strong and a little bit rough, but then there was a lot of vulnerability within it. We had tall ladders as part of our set and heaps of mats underneath them, so we had them falling from very high heights and crashing down onto these mats. So we were looking at flying and falling and that relationship between the two and how close they really are, how close that line is.
Dusk Ahead was our most recent piece. We performed it in Dublin Theatre Festival, and it was commissioned by Kilkenny Arts Festival in 2012. It was very much about blindness and invisibility, what you can see and what you cannot see at that magic hour of dusk. So we were really interested in the different phases of dusk. When darkness came, is what you're seeing real or is it imagined? So dusk is the hour between dog and wolf, and we really tried to bring that into the movement. Attachment became another part of the physicality where people and the performers were attached to each other. One of the performers is attached to someone else's lip. They're attached by their hair at one stage, attached by a rope. So interested in bringing in this idea of dusk being this uncertain time where metamorphosis occurs, where transition occurs, where things in a snap second, things go from being very safe and familiar into being dangerous and uncertain. We were interested in the physicality of the performers and their bodies and their instinct when they were blindfolded. So there's three moments in the production when they're blindfolded, and the blindfolds are opaque, so they can't see at all. And it's something incredibly real and instinctual and very beautiful to watch, because you can see that they're either clinging to each other, they're in a very vulnerable position, or they decide to forage for themselves. And when they hear a sound, it's this immediate reflex. And often the sound would be nowhere near where they think it is, but it's the immediate instinct that and the physicality of their bodies that we really wanted to show on stage.
For Dusk Ahead, again, one of the kind of influences that we were talking about was the movie Compliance by director Craig Zobel. And the score for that uses kind of a minimalist cello kind of feel. So that was, you know, something that I was taking on board. And to be honest, I probably only listened to it maybe twice and then again went off and did my own thing. Zoe Reardon was playing cello for us live as well. So she would be performing live every evening, but so would also be the dancers, because they also learned to play various instruments like the ukulele, the handbells, the glockenspiel and the accordion. And then Zoe would be playing cello along with them as well. So, I mean, and again, I think that's one thing about junk ensemble shows, is that there's always been an element of live music in association with the kind of recorded score as well. And I think that's important, that we can get the full sound through a recorded element, but the live performance just brings a new dimension and a new life to performance as well.
For Dusk Ahead, we had already cast three performers, Justine Cooper, Ryan O'Neill and Ramona Nagabchinska. We auditioned for the final two performers, held an audition at Dance House, and people came from all over Europe. Actually, everyone flew from abroad to audition, and we found our two final performers, Hayat Osa and Miguel Deville. From there, we decided we wanted to introduce the live cellist, and we worked together to create the piece in collaboration. The musical element came slowly. We got Dennis to come and teach them these instruments, so none of them were cast on their ability to sing or to play music. So we were starting from scratch, and Dennis had a lot of patience. We knew that live music was going to be a large element in the piece, and even before the audition, we knew that they would be learning instruments and playing music, but we decided not to cast the piece on those musical abilities. I think we preferred that they learned it, and it was almost like this fumbling through with a blindfold on. They're learning as they go along, and it did make it more difficult because we had such a limited period of time. We really only had 6 weeks to learn, but we did eventually get there. It meant that it had to be simple what they learned. But they did, they all sing.
It was the same in our design meetings with Sabine D'Argent. She did the visual and the costume design for Dusk Ahead, and we would often bash ideas out until we found an idea that stuck, and that developed into these long braids of golden string that could be played with by the performers, which very much paralleled Zoe playing the cello. And then Sarah Jane Shields did the lighting, and that hugely became quite significant in terms of showing that beautiful moment when you're not sure, is it dark or is it still light?
Being a twin is a beautiful thing. It's also difficult because people do associate you as one person. Our older sister loved that we are identical twins, and she always wanted to make us do different, switch places. And we mostly refused, but we let her switch our name tags when we were in art camp, and we were about 6 or so. And Megan and I had to switch name tags and go into different classes and take over the other person's painting. I wanted to do my own painting. We both hated it, and we kept jumping up when our name was called, our real name, and it ended up in tears. And I think it's hard because, you know, people love twins, and they think we're lucky, and they think that it'd be so much fun, and it is fun. But I think it took a while for us to accept ourselves as ourselves. So I went off and shaved my head and put loads of rings in my ears and tried to look very different from Megan. And, you know, now we're fine with it. I mean, we've settled into it. But I think that comes through our work a lot as well, is that kind of childhood struggle as well, and that struggle for independence and individualism. And even through memory, we seemingly have the same memory. I think I have it, Megan thinks she has it. But when I was 4 and I was remembering my birthday party, and now she tells that as her first memory, and we spoke about that quite a lot, and we use that in one of our shows called Drinking Dust.
I do remember it was our first singing concert. Jessica and I aren't singers, but it was our kindergarten concert, and we were singing Red and Yellow and Pink and Green, and I said green and Jessica said blue, and one turned to the other, and my mother was retelling me this story recently, and she still doesn't remember who said to who. One turned to the other and said, "It's green, not blue." And then we both proceeded to burst into tears until someone from the audience came up and gave us a big cookie and a big hug. And
a hanky, not a cookie.
Oh, no, I thought it was a cookie. See, this is the stolen memories here. We got a hanky and a cookie, and we won the entire audience over and then sang the song again. But it would be interesting to know who actually was the rat between the two of us to stop the performance and say, "Actually, you're wrong."
Collaboration is really the essence of our work. Working with Dennis and the other designers, they have a huge input in the piece, and we have meetings with them many, many months, sometimes years before. They have their own thoughts and their own ideas, and they're very creative beings. So it's really important to us to have that input, and that includes the performers. So Megan and I will go off
and create a lot of the work beforehand and devise and do all this, but it's not until we actually have the performers in the room that we can start really seeing the work and letting that influence come into the piece. So we'll give them a task, and it's really until they get that task, nothing can really, it can just sit there in our heads or sit there on paper, but to see it in action is a really beautiful thing to watch in that creation process.
Just to say as well, I think that like a lot of the best work is produced when it is collaborative and people are kind of most concerned about the project and not about how they are going to come across. You know, and the guys were saying it to me before, like I'd bring something in and they'd say, well, I'm not sure about that. And we'd throw it out pretty much immediately. And they were kind of saying, are you sure this is, you know, you're not too worried about that? And I'm going, well, listen, if it doesn't feel right for the project, then I think that's something that we need to kind of look at. And the same with the guys. If I, you know, see some of the pieces on the floor, I'll say, well, I'm not really sure what's happening here. And they'll react to that. And, you know, so the main thing is that at the end of the day, everyone is concerned about the final goal and the project. And it's not about an individual's role, I suppose.
The dance climate in Ireland is a healthy one right now. There seems to be lots of different things happening. There's many independent dance artists because the funding system has changed, the structure has changed, as we all know, to go more towards the independent artist and smaller companies. So I think that's affected the ecology of dance right now. There's a mix of ballet and contemporary, and then there's obviously hip-hop and jazz and all these kinds of things. The main discipline for our company is contemporary dance, and we involve theatre on the side a lot. So dance theatre is beginning to become a lot more realized in Ireland right now, whereas I don't think it was, say, 10 years ago. So it's changing. Everything is changing right now and for the better, despite the economy. And I think that there's a lot of different things happening with a lot of different companies.
Fabulous Beast is a company that's been doing dance theatre for many, many years. And I mean, they're really on an international scale now. Cosh-Cain Dance Theatre would be quite well known. They've been around for a long time. And I think that audiences are watching dance and they're watching theatre and they're seeing them combine more. I think people are seeing the boundaries swish and move and kind of migrate into each other, which is refreshing and very good for us because Ireland is such a... it's a country that works a lot on writing and a lot on words. So it can be difficult to see something and not necessarily compute it if it's not in text or if it's not in words. And I think that's starting to change now. And I think audiences are able to sit and watch something that might not have words, but they can figure out the words through this movement or through action. And that's really what we try to do, is embody that human condition or emotion, but show it through action and show it through movement. And I think that's stronger to watch. We'd also like the audience to interpret it as they will and as they please. So we're not telling them straight off exactly what they should think, but they can perhaps figure it out for themselves throughout the show.